Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This fine day, towards the end of November 2020. If you notice I'm a bit out of breath, I'm taking my constitutional and I'll just hold myself up the hill. It's steep and long. Got a little flat bit here, so I'll make a start on today's podcast. This one, I think, is going to be one in a series of four on the topic of reason. The guiding question is, what is reason? Or if you like, it's perhaps better entitled, Reasoning About Reason. And the motivation behind wanting to do this is to clarify a statement that I've been making fairly frequently in our podcasts recently, that fascism is irrational. It embraces the irrational to the expense of the rational, and that the COVID deniers, the anti-maskers, the anti-vaxxers, the science deniers are actually, whether they know it or not, getting into bed with that fascist tendency. So I thought, well, I should say I'm accusing people of being irrational or being devoid of reason. Same thing, I'm going to take it. So what do I mean? Some further clarification is needed if that term irrational or the term without reason are to be anything more than insults. So, four parts. The first part, I'm going to talk about how we might picture reason. You'll notice I don't say define reason. And I might go into, in a small way, my reasoning for avoiding defining reason in a strict sense of the term define. Then I want to talk about the age of reason, the so-called European Enlightenment, sometimes known as the Age of Reason. And try and draw a picture of the complex cultural, political, epistemological changes that were taking place in the late 18th century, or the middle to the late 18th century in Western Europe. In the second part, I'm going to consider what it is to lose one's reason. There's a popular parlance, possibly not as prevalent now as it was in the 18th and 19th centuries, but still present, which regards madness and nervous breakdown and schizophrenia and neurosis and hysteria and all of these so-called diseases as a loss of reason. And I'm going to look into that and be inspired by it, but also critical of it, and unpick it to colour in another corner of the picture I'm trying to paint of reason, well, and unreason, obviously, by the same token. It's a right steep hill, this. I will have to stop in a bit because I'll be doing another steep bit there. Then it flattens out a little bit and I'll be able to talk to you and breathe at the same time. Anyway, we'll carry on a little bit. The third part, I'll take a look at logic and argument and epistemology in general, and that will also entail a look at hermeneutics, at the way we can claim that, say, a historical narrative has a truthfulness to it, or a story about science, a narrative about the nature of science and its scope and so forth. And narratives about the nature of our current society and its culture and its politics. So I want to talk about how we rationally deal with those questions, because they're not entirely questions of argument or even questions of logic, though argument, logic, facticity all play a part in those styles of talking about things. The fourth part, I'll talk about unreason and its place. And strange as it might seem, I do think unreason, irrationality, has an ineluctable place in human life. But there is a question about where we place it, what significance we give it. And I will argue that we both over-endow it with significance, as is the case with fascism and these modern anti-rationality fascisms. But that we both also underplay it when we think we can become behaviourists or Mr. Logic in the face of creativity, in the face of mystical experience and so forth. And I want to make a claim in this fourth episode of this series that reason and unreason can strike a balance and become very fruitful in that event. But that itself is a question which we need to reason about, as well as engage with experientially in a direct way. And this reminds me of a lecture I gave when I was working at the university. We did have a first year module called Using Reason Critically and Creatively. And for my final talk in that series of lectures, I gave a lecture on Zen, and I think I entitled it The Uses of Unreason. So I want to claim unreason for reason, and I want to claim reason for poetry and art and inspiration and those experiences of oneness with the universe and with one's fellows. So that'll be the fourth one. And I'm hoping out of the picture that arises that you'll see that my estimation of fascist unreason is pretty cogent. Okay, I'm going to pause a little bit now because I'm staggering up a steep hill. I do actually feel quite fit, even though I'm an old git now. I do feel quite fit and able to scurry across this rather hilly and very beautiful terrain. To get started, let's ask what you would find if you did actually look in the dictionary and see what the dictionary has to say about reason. So, even though I said we can't define in the strict sense, nevertheless, this is what dictionaries do. They try and give us definitions. And most dictionaries say something like, reason is the application of thought to solve problems. And the first thing that that brings to mind is practical problems. If you wanted to build a bridge across a river or across a stream, you'd sit down and have a think first, and you'd maybe do some drawings, and you'd maybe take some measurements and try and actually project into the future how you might do that. And somebody in the Neolithic would proceed in that fashion, and a modern engineer architect in the 21st century would also proceed like that, except with a lot more tools at his or her disposal and some better maths and so forth. Now, all of this would fall into the category of what Habermas called instrumental reason. An instrumental reason is the way in which we apply our thinking abilities to attempt to predict and control aspects of the future so that our human practical needs are met and our survival needs are met and so forth. So science and technology, and science as the handmaiden of technology, could be understood in this way. But of course there are other aspects of reason, and again I'm going to appeal to Habermas here. There is formal reason, logic, and that is reasoning that takes place in a closed universe of symbols and rules and axioms and so forth. And this applies somewhat to mathematics as well, or what you might call pure mathematics, which, though you cannot derive it entirely from logic, nor vice versa, from what I can see, they are nevertheless closely related. So we have rules of reasoning within a closed system, a closed universe of symbols. This is a very useful tool in many instances for mathematising the processes of instrumental reason, whereby we try and predict and control aspects of the universe so that we're better able to survive and flourish as human beings. Formal reason, then. Habermas also identifies what he calls communicative reason, and this is the kind of reason which we use to evaluate our priorities and to consider questions that are very vital to us, but which nevertheless are not quite so susceptible to the scientific method, or what you might call instrumental reason. And in this realm we might find questions like, what is the best kind of social organisation for us? What do we want? What should we prioritise when we try and determine the organisation and structures and institutions of our societies? Similar questions, how are we to understand our history as a community, as a species? As a culture? How are we to understand our present culture so that we might use that understanding, as again, as a handmaiden to instrumental reason, whereby we actually get very hands-on about our needs and the problems we need to solve? And I think this probably falls under hermeneutics, and this will be the next podcast. I will look at that class of questions, vital questions. If we're going to do ethics, if we're going to do politics, if we're going to do cultural criticism, if we're going to do art, we need some reason, some type of reason, something that we can give some measure of the rigour of in order to deal with these aspects of life. Now, I mentioned Habermas there, and I'm not wanting to raise this up as a be-all and end-all, but I do think this is a very useful taxonomy. And if you go back over the podcast, you'll find that I did do a podcast a couple of years ago where I delineate this taxonomy of reasons that Habermas comes out with. Also, I'll just mention while I'm talking about past podcasts that if you go back, I'm not sure how far, at least a couple of years, but you'll find a podcast about the the difficulties in defining art and using a Wittgensteinian approach to art, which I take to be a concept that eludes definition in the very strict philosophical sense. But nevertheless, you know, this is not a desperate situation. It's a situation which we're quite able to handle and to understand with the help of a couple of Wittgensteinian concepts. So that's worth looking. If you're interested in this somewhat geekish domain, I'd just look back over the podcast and have a listen to those. And I think I could do a reasonable job of making those ideas accessible to anybody with a bit of curiosity and a moderately functioning brain. So moving on, you can see that the dictionary definition kind of guides us into thinking about instrumental reason without giving us too much of a taxonomy. I'm not sure, I haven't looked at every possible dictionary definition, but this generally is where we get to with the quest for definition. And that definition is, as you can see, it's not exhaustive. It's not able to do justice to the ways in which we do actually use thought. And sometimes, of course, we think, and we think rationally, not necessarily to solve problems, almost as an entertainment, perhaps. But generally, there is some sort of practical application is in the picture somewhere. Some kind of utopian thinking, perhaps, is very often in the picture when we sit down and think hard about something we need to sort out. And I think this difficulty with definition, the way it's almost inevitably going to be rather thin, it certainly goads me into wanting to paint a picture of reason in all of its breadth and multi-dimensionality, rather than get something very square and cut and dried down. And this is the reason I take a bit of a Wittgensteinian approach and just think about the word reason. And, what does this word mean? What does it denote or connote? And maybe it connotes rather than denotes. I think this is the line I would be taking. And, you know, this again is Wittgensteinian. And Wittgenstein, of course, famously said, you know, meaning in most cases, the meaning of a word is its use. Not every case, he's not going to get dogmatic about it. But often we want to know what we're talking about. Let's look at the usage. And this is an approach that massively broadens out our understanding of reason. It means we can get an historical sense of it. It means we can get a sense of its real breadth in the range of questions and problems that in the real world, in actuality, it tackles. And it also gives us a sense of actual lived experience of human beings and their functioning as reasoning animals, as the rational animal, which brings in notions of pathology and notions of some kind of healthy functioning. Hence, you know, this phrase "losing your reason" as being synonymous with a kind of what you'd say mental illness. Or I mean, there are various ways of understanding madness, of course, you know, right the way from demon possession to having your soul stolen to chemical imbalances in the brain and so forth. But nevertheless, the whole concept of reason draws us onto that terrain to enrich our picture of what's going on in the rational life of human beings. And this Wittgensteinian approach produces that broadening and of course that makes the task in some senses vaster and perhaps more difficult than if we were to presume to ourselves that we'd found some nice, neat, little cut and dried definition. So it's in this mode that I want to say, well, in Europe, in Western Europe and European Western culture, we have this notion that there was an age of reason. Sometime in the perhaps the middle of the to the end of the 18th century, and that was known also as the European Enlightenment, or simply the Enlightenment. Now, I don't mean to get Eurocentric about this particularly, because we can find many of these cultural transformations and the concerns that were behind it in India and in China, sometimes in the very great antiquity. A lot of these formations get their kind of precursors and so forth. I'm not saying this is the property in any way of the West. I don't mean to be Eurocentric, but I do claim that the European Enlightenment did actually spread across the planet. It's what fires up the Indian economy today, even though we might have a religious population. The play of religion in the political life. And a lot of astrology and other such kind of stuff going down on the Indian subcontinent. The same in China and Asiatic Russia and amongst indigenous peoples all around the world. Very often they hang on to aspects of their indigenous culture, but they find themselves embedded in economies and political organisations and polities which are deeply structured around the European Enlightenment. For good or ill, it was very powerful and was able to stamp itself on the world. So that's as much as I'm saying. I'm not trying to be Eurocentric. And I mean, my own view of the Enlightenment is that, like everything, it's got a shitty end of the stick and a nice clean end of the stick. You know, every stick has two ends, you know. The European Enlightenment is of that character. So I'm not praising it, but I'm not doing it down either. I'm going to try and figure out what it tells us about our self-image as the rational animal. Now, the Age of Reason, or the European Enlightenment, was the self-congratulatory title that an intellectual, political, philosophical, religious, scientific movement that overtook the life of Western Europe and what was to become the United States of America in the back half of the 18th century. And it was a movement that affected just about everything, and you're kind of hard pressed as to what you want to tease out as being paradigmatic or germane to our discussion. Okay, I'm going to just take a break now again, and perhaps continue this when I get home. I'll probably do it live onto the computer to flesh out the salient points of the Enlightenment. So I'm getting a bit cold and it's a bit windy. So back soon. I'm back home now, and I've just had a listen to what I came out with when I was out today, earlier, taking my constitutional. And a slight change of plan. I've decided that the discussion of the Age of Reason or the European Enlightenment should have its own podcast, otherwise this one's going to be sort of quite long. So it looks as though we're going to run to 5 episodes in this series. I mean, again, there's time for it to expand a bit more. There is a lot of material on this matter that I've got prepared, and I don't know, it could be sort of 20 or 30 episodes if I wasn't careful, but I do want to keep it manageable and accessible to people. So I don't want to go down too many rabbit holes. But anyway, what I'll do is later tonight or tomorrow, I'll record episode 2 on the matter of reason. And this will be about the European Enlightenment, and I'll hone in on a few features that are pertinent to the overall aim of this discussion. So thank you for listening. Thanks to our patrons who very kindly bung us a few quid, and it all helps. I will say that there's lots of stuff in the pipeline. I've got many things prepared. And Anna and myself have been discussing the possibility of opening another channel specifically for the Interesting Times material, which is the discussion of current affairs and reflections on current affairs in the light of various philosophical issues, and vice versa, hoping that we can illuminate certain philosophical questions through current affairs and illuminate current affairs through certain aspects of the philosophical canon, and also matters that just seem interesting to us in our raw thought. Okay, so wash your hands, look after yourselves, lots of love, and make knowledge great again. Hwyl fawr, tarawen.